beginning from the Adnishthoma Yagya. Vittanoshi, spread. Tanva, by your body. Traya, the three Vedas. Chatu Hotraka, of the four kinds of Vedic priests known as Hota. Advaryu, Brahma and Udghata. Vidyaya, by the necessary knowledge. Cha, also. Twam, you. Ekaha, one. Atma, the supersoul. Atma vatam, of all living entities. Anadi, without beginning. Anantaparaha, without end. Kavehi, the supreme inspirer. Antatma, the super soul within the core of the heart. So, translation. My dear Lord, by your form as the Vedas personified and through knowledge relating to the activities of all the Yajnik Brahmanas, you spread the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies of the seven kinds of sacrifices headed by Agnishtoma. Indeed, you inspire the Yajnik Brahmanas to perform the rituals mentioned in the three Vedas. Being the Supreme Soul, the Supersoul of all living entities, you are beginningless, endless, and omniscient beyond the limits of time and space. You can repeat, my dear Lord.
My dear Lord.
By your form as the Vedas personified, and through knowledge relating to the activities of all the Yajnik Brahmanas, you spread the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies of the seven kinds of sacrifices headed by Agnishtoma. Indeed, you inspire the Yajnik Brahmanas to perform the rituals mentioned in the three Vedas. Being the Supreme Soul, the Super Soul of all living entities, you are beginningless, endless and omniscient, beyond the limits of time and space. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, the knowledge thereof, and the person who agrees to perform them are inspired by the Supreme Lord. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Matak Smritir Jnanam Aponam Cha. From the Lord come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The Supersoul is situated in everyone's heart. Sarvasya chaham riti sanavishtaha Ishwara sarvabhutanam rideshe arjuna tishtati. And when one is advanced in Vedic knowledge, the Supersoul gives him directions. Acting as Supersoul, the Lord gives inspiration to a suitable person to perform the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. In this connection, four classes of priests known as Ritvik are required. They are mentioned as Hota, Advaryu, Brahma, and Udghata. Okay? So, Tvam Saptatantum Vitanoshi Tanva Traya Chatur Hotraka Vidyacha Tvam Hekahatmatma Vatam Anhadir Anantapura Kavir Antaratma. So, Omagana Timiranda Shaganjana Shlakya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So there are several points here, like in the verse that's mentioned in the three Vedas, and actually we understand there's four original Vedas. So why is only three Vedas mentioned here? Because, of course, the three Vedas are the Samaveda, Yajurveda, and Sama, Yajur, and of course the Atharva is actually not considered one of the three Vedas. The Samaveda, Atharvaveda, Yajurveda, and what's the last one? Rigveda, yeah. So the Atharvaveda actually contains many different injunctions as far as like cursing and weapons for the Kshatriyas and things like that. So generally, it's like almost like the dark Veda. Not dark Vader, but the dark Veda. So that's why it's mentioned three Vedas here rather than four Vedas. And the brahmanas that are being mentioned here are ritualistic brahmanas. I want to talk about that a little bit, and also the problem of being a ritualistic brahmana, because we still see this to a certain degree in India amongst people born in Brahminical families, and they always keep the ritualistic fire burning in the house. It's not loud enough. What's that? It's on, but it has to be turned up. So they always... Oh, that's good. They always keep the ritualistic fire burning in the house. I mean, that's like the eternal lamp. The religion that I was born in, they have this lamp that keeps burning all the time. So the brahmanas, they keep this ritualistic fire like 24 hours a day going in their house. And they do the coven, or they do a fire sacrifice every day. So here... the ritualistic brahmins are described as four different types. And I'm going to describe those types. The hota, which is the first type mentioned, is the brahmin who offers things into the sacrifice. The udgata is the brahmana who chants mantras during the sacrifice. And of course, we also understand that there needs to be a brahmana who checks the proper pronunciation of the chanter. And there needs to be a brahmana, a third brahmana, who actually corrects, not only second one checks, and the third one actually corrects the chanting of the first brahmana. If the first brahmana makes a mistake, and the second one actually notices the mistake, and the third one actually does the right chanting. So it's quite a complex affair. So that's the Udgata. The Advarayu Brahmana is the one who lights the fire. But not only does he light the fire with a bunch of matches, or nowadays they have these different lighters, you know, the disposable lighters. They're actually quite dangerous. That's why we don't use them here in the temple, because if they're exposed to fire, they explode. I know many temples, they use these disposable lighters. Anyway, so this particular Brahmana, the Advarayu, he is able to light a fire by mantra. It's described that he doesn't light a fire with another fire. He lights the fire just by chanting some particular mantra. I had one friend who emulated the activities of this particular type of brahmana. He put in an electric device to sort of create the fire inside the fire sacrifice, and he pushed a button every time he said the mantra. And people were very impressed. Of course, it was all hidden. And people were very impressed. They thought, wow, a bona fide Vedic Brahmin. But actually, that's how the Brahmins were supposed to start the fire. Of course, there's another way through the Aranni wood, which they would rub the wood, just like we learned when we were young in the campfires, they would rub wood in a certain way to create a spark, and there was a fire. But the really expert Brahmins were able to create a fire just by chanting certain mantras. And the fourth type of Brahmin was the Brahma Brahmin. And that Brahma Brahmin was the one who supervised the rest of them. So in other words, you had this whole crew there of Brahmanas supervising. And there are seven different types of Vedic sacrifice mentioned here in this verse. And we're going to go over some of them. The first one mentioned is Agni Shtoma. And in this Agni Shtoma sacrifice, you require 16 Brahmins to do it properly, and it lasts for 5 days. That's a pretty heavy sacrifice. And the purpose of that sacrifice is to go to heaven. And There was an interesting performance of that mentioned in the Vedic literatures, particularly the histories, itihasas, where this Trishanku, he wanted to go to heaven, and he was a king. But he wanted to go to heaven in a different way than most people go to heaven. He wanted to go to heaven in his own body, you know, without changing the body. So he went to Vasishtha Muni, and he asked Vasishtha Muni to send him to heaven performing the Stakishtoma sacrifice without change of body. And Vasishtha Muni said, that's not possible, I'm not going to do it. And then he went to Vasishtha Muni's sons, and he said, your father refused, so therefore you should do that for me. And the sons of Vasishtha Muni were so much incensed that they had been asked to do something against their father's wish that they cursed this Trishanku to actually become a Chandala. So it's described that all of his features changed, his body changed, his gross body changed at that particular time. He looked like really gross, and all of his ornaments turned to brass or to iron. You know, previously the king has gold ornaments, so all the ornaments turned to brass or iron. And so he was really upset. Finally, he goes to Visvamitra Muni, and he says, my dear Visvamitra Muni, please perform this Agnishtoma sacrifice and send me to heaven. And Visvamitra Muni says, I'll do it. Precisely because this would show that he's more powerful than Vasishtha, which is really interesting. So he began to perform this sacrifice, actually invited all the brahmanas to come to help him perform the sacrifice. As I mentioned here, it takes 16 brahmanas in 5 days. And what happened is nothing happened. That the king, or the previous king, now he was a Chandala, didn't go to heaven. So then Visvamitra Muni, he said, by my own power I'm going to send you to heaven. So by the power, or the yogic power, or the power of all the austerities that Visvamitra Muni did, Trishanku started to rise through the air to go to the heavenly planets. And then what happened is the residents of the heavenly planets, particularly Indra and others, they said, go back down. So he went back down. And then Visvamitra Muni said, go back up. And so bouncing back and forth like a yo-yo in the air. And finally, there was a mediation between Visvamitra Muni and the demigods. And they said, well, he can't come to our heaven, but you have to create another heaven for him. So that was the way that Trishanku it's described in the Bhagavatam, he's head down, he's upside down, like in his heaven right now, enjoying whatever, his imitation heaven. So anyway, so that's the Agnishtoma sacrifice. There's all the other ones are actually pretty fruitive in different ways. One is the Atirata sacrifice is mentioned here, which is basically a sacrifice. This is very interesting. Not interesting, actually. It's a little bit of information. It's a sacrifice where one takes the pot that's offered in another sacrifice called the soda sheep sacrifice and either rejects it or accepts it. I mean, can you imagine? I'm just trying to point out the complexity of these different sacrifices. And then there's the Vajapaya sacrifice, which is our friend Daksha was famous for performing that. And he was doing that to have good progeny and to fill the universe. So all these different sacrifices, whatever they are, and of course there's also another sacrifice for the Shraddha ceremony, which is the Shodashi is the Shraddha ceremony, and you actually have a pot there, and we mentioned before that pot is either rejected or accepted by the Ati in the Atiratra sacrifice. So very, very complex affairs. And so they're all done for material upliftment. Material aggrandizement. And therefore, Krishna says to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtrigunya Bhavarjuna Nirdwandvo Nityayoksham Nirdwandvo Nityasakrishto Nityayoksham Akravan. He says that you're not meant for these things. These Vedic rituals and sacrifices are mainly for those in the three modes of material nature, and you should rise above these things and be transcendental. So the problem with doing these sacrifices is that one forgets the purpose. As Prabhupada points out here, Vedayishcha Savaraham Eva Vedyo, he says this, by all the Vedas, Krishna is to be known. So you're doing the sacrifices, but you forget why you're doing them. And there's several instances of, you know, people really making mistakes because they became wrapped up in the sacrifice. In other words, not seeing the forest for the tree, for the trees. They became wrapped up in the sacrifices and they forgot the purpose. In fact, they acted in a contrary way to the purpose of the sacrifices. Because even if the sacrifices are meant to elevate one materially, they're just a stepping stone or a step to come to the ultimate point of worshiping Krishna. So, one story, this is very interesting, is the story of Daksha. We mentioned before he was performing the Vajapaya sacrifice. So as he was performing the sacrifice, he was entered the assembly to perform the sacrifice. But what happened is that Lord Shiva did not actually respect him properly. Because he was so attached to the ritualistic activities of the sacrifice, he criticized Lord Shiva. And committing a Vaishnava aparada basically nullifies all the effects of whatever sacrifice one is performing. Not only does one lose his ability to understand Krishna consciousness and to relish Krishna consciousness, you know, his bhakti latavij becomes trampled like mad elephant, but one loses his good fortune too. There's many stories about that. I mean, Daksha obviously lost his good fortune. He had to take a goat head. I mean, that's a pretty big punishment, you know. Someone comes to the temple to perform a sacrifice, and ultimately he had to do the sacrifice with a goat head. I mean, imagine that sort of punishment. And you see what happens when you commit an offense against a Vaishnava and Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. You have Hari Das Thakur offended by this Gopal Chakravarti, who really threatened to cut off Hari Das Thakur's nose. He didn't do it. But he was talking to Hari Das Thakur in the whole assembly about the potency of Namavas chanting. And Hari Das Thakur made the point that by Namavas chanting alone, one gets liberated. And of course, Namavas means chanting Krishna's names even by accident or separating the syllables or jokingly or even derisively, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And so Hari Das Thakur made the point that one gets liberation, and this Gopal Chakravarti, he disagreed with Hari Das Thakur. He said, you know, because you're wrong, basically, and if you don't get liberation by Namavas chanting, I'm going to cut your nose off. And Hari Das Thakur just took it humbly. He said, you know, I cut my own nose off in that particular case. But what happened is that Gopal Chakravarti had his nose cut off by leprosy. Right after that, he got leprosy, and he just, his whole life was finished. Previously, he was a very wealthy man. He was appointed by the Majumdras in the tax collection, and he had a lot of money, and he was kicked out simply by committing the Vaishnava aparada. And, of course, another story is Gopal Chapala, similar name, Gopal Chapala, who committed offense to Srivas Thakur, and because he didn't understand the purpose of the Vedas, and he started to put the ingredients for worshipping Durga in front of Srivas Thakur's door to sort of frame him. And because that happened, he also got leprosy. And when he tried to go to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to beg for forgiveness, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I curse you to be bitten by the worms, because in leprosy you have so many worms. I curse you to be bitten by these worms for many millions of births. So you can see, one can act perfectly as a ritualistic Brahmin, but when one defies Vaishnavas or doesn't understand the purpose of all these Vedic rituals, you know, Vedeshtha Savera, then it's all useless, and worse than useless, it's counterproductive. And another story is from the Krishna book. No work today? Yeah, another story is, because the codicil is where you're here. That's nice. So another story is from the Krishna book where you have a bunch of ritualistic brahmanas doing everything perfectly according to the rules and regulations. And Krishna sends the coward boys to ask for some food, because the coward boys are actually hungry. They go to Krishna first of all. And they say, our dear Krishna, we're hungry. You see, some of the, actually it's interesting, many of the pastimes in Krishna book are stimulated by the coward boys apparently wanting something. Like when they, where they smell the tal fruits, you know, they want to go to the Talavana forest. And Dainakasura was there. The coward boys say, we like some of those fruits. So you see, of course, they're not controlled by hunger, but under the influence of yoga maya, they actually appear to be, to stimulate or to encourage Krishna in particular pastimes. So in this particular pastime, the coward boys said, you know, we'd like to eat. And Krishna said to the coward boys that you should go to these brahmanas. You know, they're performing the sacrifice. They have all these different ingredients, all the food, the ghee and everything like that. And ask for some of the food in the name of Balaram. In other words, the brahmanas were so ritualistic that Krishna was afraid, of course, pastime. Krishna was afraid that if they asked, the coward boys asked for the food in the his name, the brahmanas would be even more insulted because Krishna is a Vaishya. That's really materialistic vision. You know, you see Krishna as a Vaishya. And sometimes people see acharyas like that too. You know, they say that one can only be an acharya if one is born in a Brahmin family. We get a lot of people who come from India who actually say that. I mean, there's one of the Goswamis from one of the temples of Vrindavan who's come to the West and bewildered a lot of the devotees and say, you know, you have to be born in a Goswami family, a Brahmin family, to be an acharya. But actually, we see some of our greatest acharyas, like Narottamadas Thakur and others, who were not born in Goswami families. And, you know, even Bhaktivinoda Thakur and you know, of course, they have some Brahminical history, but also it's a mixed family there in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's family. Well, one may criticize the past of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what he ate, etc., like that. So there's different ways that one can criticize even great devotees. You even criticize the Supreme Personality of Godhead for being a Vaishya. Can you imagine? I'm not going to worship Krishna. He's just a Vaishya. You know, my God should be a Brahmin. Okay. Worship Lord Kapiladeva then. If you're hung up on that particular point, then you can worship Lord Kapiladeva. But we worship Lord Nrsingadeva, who's not even, or Kurma, or Matsya, or Varaha. I mean, we're worshiping a pig. I mean, sometimes people criticize, you know, you Vaishnavas worship pigs. Oh, it's an interesting story about that, just a side story. That the Muslims were attacking Tirupati, Tirumala. They wanted to go to Tirumala because they heard it was so much wealth there in Tirumala. It's the wealthiest temple in India. So the devotees had a plan how to stop the Muslims. They didn't have any army. They didn't have any force. So they just told the Muslims, they're worshiping a pig up there. And so what the Muslims do, they ran away. And Tirumala was saved because of that. So anyway, I mean, so Charyaman Vyaniyam Navamanya Tikarichit Namarcha Bhujasu Yate Sarva Deva Mayoda Guru. So one shouldn't see the Acharya in terms of mundane distinctions. And one shouldn't see the Supreme Personality got it. But anyway, Krishna's plan was to have the coward boys ask for food in the name of Balaram, because at least Balaram was a Kshatriya. Of course, Kshatriyas are not supposed to beg. That's actually prohibited for a Kshatriya to beg. A Kshatriya can do other activities in the case of emergency, but not begging. That's prohibited. So anyway, so the coward boys go and they say, and they actually were told just to ask in the name of Balaram, but they asked in the name of Krishna. Which is interesting. If you read that story, he said, you know, Krishna and Balaram are hungry. And the brahmanas basically, they were so much absorbed in the ritualistic ceremonies, they didn't even say Hare Krishna or hello to the boys. They just ignored them. So the Brahmanas got their reaction. So the reaction was happened a little while later. After the coward boys went back and told Krishna what had happened, then Krishna said to the coward boys, you go and ask for food to the Brahmanas' wives, and in my name. So they went to the Brahmanas' wives, and it's described by Kavi Karnapur, who describes this pastime a little bit more elaborately than in the Krishna book, that the Brahmanas' wives grabbed all the food that was meant for the sacrifice and followed Krishna back, followed the coward boys back to where Krishna was. Not only to give the food, but they left. And the Brahmanas, because they had ignored Krishna in performing their sacrifice, their wives ignored them. Can you imagine? You know, you're doing a sacrifice, swaha, swaha, swaha. And then your wife comes up and starts walking away with all the ingredients. What are you doing, honey? You know, whatever they call Priya. What are you doing? And the wife didn't even say anything to the husband. They just like, didn't even say, hasta la vista. You know, they just like walked away with all these ingredients. And says, come back! Come back! And the husband, it described, didn't follow the wives because they were afraid of being with Krishna. Because they were afraid, you know, if they were seen with Krishna, Kamsa's spies would report it to Kamsa and they'd get in trouble. They didn't have faith. You know, it's important to have faith that Krishna's always protecting one and maintaining one. And these Brahmanas, they just had faith in these rituals without understanding the reason. So, anyway, so the wives went, brought all the food. Krishna said, go back. And the wives actually described, it's described, had some sort of conjugal attachment to Krishna. That wasn't meant to be, though, at that particular juncture. And Krishna said back, and the wives said, go back. And the wife said, you know, our husbands are going to be really upset with us. They're going to be, you know, they're not going to be happy campers, you know. In the old days, you know, husbands were a little tough with their wives. So they were worried. Krishna said, don't worry. They'll be kind to you. All right, so then they walk back, and the husbands accept them back. And the husband had the realization that they were off. And they actually said, the hell with us being Brahmanas, the hell with our sacrifices. Our wives have actually achieved the highest goal. So in other words, they came to that realization of what the goal of Krishna consciousness was, the goal of the Vedic rituals was. But still, Prabhupada said that they didn't have the courage to go to see Krishna because they were afraid of Kamsa. So, anyway, so these are different varieties of ritualistic Brahmanas. So in our Krishna consciousness movement, let's get back to the modern day today. We have to be careful. What do we have to be careful of? This principle of niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means doing all the rules and regulations, you know, following very, very strictly, but forgetting the purpose. Because Rupa Goswami says in the Upadeshamrita, there are different causes of fall down from devotional service. Achahara prayasa sha prajapa niyamagraha jana sangasta lalyam cha sabir bhakti bhaktir vinashyati. He says one can fall down due to over-collecting, over-eating, over-endeavoring, talking nonsense, or going on the internet too often and looking at different things. He doesn't mention the internet, but obviously, by extrapolation, we can understand that is also prajapa. You know, sometimes, you know, so many people have internet addiction. Devotees have internet addiction. It's one of the biggest problems nowadays. Addiction to the internet. You just start, it's surfing. So anyway, so prajapa, and then niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means giving up the rules and regulations, and niyamagraha means following them like a ritualistic brahmana. But the real point is to really give our heart to Krishna, be absorbed in Krishna's names, and even all the rituals we do, and we do have rituals, I'm not saying that rituals shouldn't be done, are meant to help us focus on the Nam, on the holy names. Just like today is Ekadashi, so I guess it's an Ekadashi discussion. So everything we do, because it's kalo nishteva, nishteva nishteva, gati ranyata. Is it? Harinam, Harinam, Harinam eva kevalam. That in this age especially, you're not going to get liberated from doing anything else. Of course, Vaishnava Seva gives you Namaruchi. We talked about this the other day, that two things, actually when I was giving the seminar, the two things work together. Namaruchi, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions are Namaruchi and Jivadoya. So Jivadoya starts with Vaishnava Seva, you know, serving the Vaishnavas rather than offending the Vaishnavas, which we told the story about in Daksha. So that's really the point. And Namaruchi, or having a taste for the holy names, or advancing by chanting Hare Krishna, means we have to chant with our subtle body, not only with the gross body. I mean, many of us, you know, like Prabhupada gave the example one time, he was chanting on his beads, and he was moving the counter beads down, and he said, well, I finished my 16 rounds, now I can do any damn thing. So that's an indication of one who just like chants, you know, moving the mouth. And the acharyas say that the Maha Mantra is not simply a material sound vibration created by the mouth. It must descend. Golokera Premadana Hurinama Sankirtana. It descends from Goloka Vrindavan, but it has to descend through the heart. Bhavanti Vritkarna, Rasayana Katacha Joshana Rashi Opavargavartmi, the ear and the heart. So we have to be connected, not only with the gross body, but the subtle body, while we're chanting the holy names. And, of course, that means that we should be praying to Krishna for whatever, you know, spiritual advancement, praying to Krishna for connection to the holy names, praying to Krishna to become a servant of our spiritual master, as we mentioned last night. And this is actually the purpose of the Vedas, is the purpose of human life. So we shouldn't forget that. So today, be a goddessy, it's very important to focus on, not this that we're chanting 64 rounds just to get them done. You know, that's not really the point. I mean, it's better to chant 16 good rounds than 64 inattentive rounds. So we're chanting 60, you know, those of us, you know, myself, I'm going to try, who are chanting 64 rounds should actually be chanting to connect to Krishna, to give pleasure to Krishna, to become a servant of Krishna. It has to come from the heart. So, any questions or comments? Actually, my watchers.
Yeah. Prabhupada one time said that the parrot may chant Hare Krishna, but when someone grabs the parrot, it goes squawk.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Anybody else have a question?
Okay.
Okay, Purvaji.
So, in this Vaishnava Parag situation, suppose you're in a situation where you're in a conversation with a senior devotee, like your temple president at GBC, definitely more advanced than you, and you hear them say something derogatory, not like really heavy, like that. Devotee you're talking about in Lord Chaitanya's pastime.
Yeah.
And then you don't say anything, but later on you realize, oh wow.
It was an event.
I should have said something.
Yeah. Then there's several things you can do. One is you go up to the person who was offended and say, you know, I heard some things, and please forgive me for hearing those things. You know, you go to the person. Or you can correct the person who said it. And if, you know, if the person won't hear you, it won't take that correction, then it's better to go to the person who was offended or write them or something like that. Say, you know, I'm sorry. I mean, obviously, if one's in a management position, sometimes you have to point out, as I say, hate the sin, not the sinner. I mean, you have to point out certain things that are happening. You know, this person doesn't know how to cook or something like that. I mean, that's a practical thing. It's not an offense. It's not a personal thing. So you have to be able to differentiate practical observation. It's not offensive. It's meant for such a prihitam, for meant for helping someone truthfully, pleasingly, and beneficially. Those are the standards of speech mentioned by Krishna in the Gita. Okay.